ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
So it's good to have all you guys back on the Twitch stream. I hope you can hear us on air. We lost our power for a bit. I don't know if we got struck by lightning or what, but all of a sudden, we lost our phones, we lost our internet, we lost our signal, we lost everything. And Aaron's been, you know, putting in the extra time on the other side of the glass, trying to figure out how to get us back up and running. We're back on the Twitch stream, so we know you can at least see us and hear us on Twitch. And as I was saying, it was Andy's book was a lot different read than what I thought it was going to be. It was not an anti-Astros book. It was not a, oh, they're all dirty cheaters type book. It wasn't that way at all. It was very much into, you know, how the culture got created. You know, the backgrounds of the main players, Beltran, Cora, Hinch, Luno, Strom, the, you know, those being the primary guys, you know, how they all got to where they came up. And people are like, well, why didn't you ask him about the Yankees letter? Well, because we were talking about the Astros sign-stealing book, not the Yankees letter. And in grand scheme of things, the Yankees letter doesn't impact whatever happened with the Astros. And none of us know what's in the letter. Yes, I would like the letter to be released. If it's nothing in there and it's not that big a deal, then why are they fighting so hard to hide it? But in the grand scheme of what the Astros did or didn't do or how they got punished or how they got to, you know, creating their sign-stealing plans and how they changed them, it doesn't mean anything. By the way, Astros are up 5-0 on the Orioles right now as Yordan Alvarez has a 3-run homer. Yuli's got a sac fly. And Chaz McCormick with an RBI single. Astros hang 5 in the third inning. We're in the bottom of the third. It's 5-0. But I tell you, I was surprised by how well the book was done because I was expecting, you know, New York guy to just take all pro Yankees and the Astros are dirty cheaters, and that is not how the book reads in any way, shape, or form. I would tell you, if you are an Astros fan, you will probably enjoy the book. It was really well done. And I know we went long with Andy, so we had to shorten up a couple of things. Dan Lust is going to join us at 8:15 regarding the Supreme Court ruling on the NCAA, assuming that our phone lines work. Aaron is really on the other side of the glass, basically pulling everything apart right now, trying to make sure that everything will work for the rest of the show. So Dan's going to join us in a bit. But the stuff regarding the Astros and the book, it was really well done. And I said it took me about 3 hours to read the whole thing. And if you're an Astros fan, I think that you will appreciate the work that went into it and all the backstories that were done into it. Another really interesting piece from the book regarded Roberto Osuna and Brandon Taubman. Now, you guys remember Brandon Taubman was the one who basically was harassing 3 female reporters in the Astros locker room regarding Roberto Osuna. And really interesting story how in the past, previously, the Astros would not touch Aroldis Chapman because of the domestic violence issue that he had. And Osuna's DV issue was a lot bigger than what people realized because Osuna's wife fled the country. And I mean, they were in Canada at the time, but she fled Canada. She did not go to the States. She went back home. So there was no way to have a witness against Osuna because she bailed, completely bailed. And in the story, in the book, it goes into the Astros' discussions on Roberto Osuna and how the five guys who formed the trust group in Jeff Luhnow's circle, and one of them being Brandon Taubman, every single one of them was 100% adamant not to go after Roberto Osuna. None of them wanted him. And they all thought after Luhnow had passed on Chapman, there was no way he'd go for Osuna. And the Astros had a minor leaguer who was on film beating up a woman in a stairwell in a minor league stadium. And a lot of the players had tweeted out some stuff about, you know, real harsh, hardline stances, anti-domestic violence. And how could you bring this guy in? He will not fit in the clubhouse. He will not fit in the dynamic. And Brandon Taubman was one of the first guys that, no, he won't fit. We don't want him. Bad fit, bad guy, bad. Which is why it's so ironic that it was Taubman who was the one talking the junk at the female reporters, because he was the guy who was most adamant about not bringing in Osuna. And then the Astros acquire Ryan Pressly. And everybody thinks, oh, we got Pressly. Okay, we're not going to go and get Osuna. We're in the clear. Wrong. He goes and he does the deal, Giles, for Osuna. And it's Taubman's job to work with Osuna one-on-one in the video room and go over his RPM and go over his releases and go over his tells and sit there with the video and the cameras and the slow-mos and work with him on all of this stuff. Taubman doesn't want any part of the guy, yet he's the one who has to do it. And it's just, it's really well done and well researched, the amount of stuff that you'll find in that book. And I think the overwhelming majority of fans are going to learn a lot of things about all the players that were involved. And when I say players, I don't mean baseball players. I mean the players in the sign-stealing scandal, the players, the key figures. There's a lot of really well-researched stories in there. And I think you'll find it to be a very interesting read. You know, one of the guys who was part of that brain trust was so angry that Luhnow made the deal for Osuna that at the end of the year, it wasn't even the end of the year, it was like right before the end of the year, he quit. He quit. He took a job with another team the next year. And that was a guy that Luhnow had brought in from the very beginning. He was one of Luhnow's guys. And he was so disgusted with the decision to bring in Osuna that he peaced out. A lot of really good stories in there. If you're an Astros fan, I think you'll enjoy it. I know a lot of it is stuff that you don't want to talk about. It's stuff that you kind of want to put behind you. But it was well done. Things that aren't well done, well, we could probably start with whatever's going on when it comes to Deshaun Watson. Not well done. And we'll get into that a little bit later on in the program. But today, the Supreme Court ruled 9-0. Understand how hard it is to get a unanimous Supreme Court decision on anything in the current political landscape. Like, they would disagree just for the sake of disagreeing because, all right, well, you know what? You're Republican, you're conservative justice, I'm a liberal justice, or vice versa. And you know what? We're just not going to agree, so bleep you. I'm deliberately not going to agree. 9-0. The Supreme Court absolutely hammered the NCAA today. There is absolutely nothing that transpired in either opinion. Whether it was the court opinion written by Justice Gorsuch or the concurring opinion written by Justice Kavanaugh. Both of them absolutely obliterated the NCAA, actually threatened their antitrust exemption. This is as big a legal beatdown as any one organization can actually have. And coming up next, we're going to talk to our buddy Dan Lust from Garrigus & Garrigus in New York City, sports law lawyers. Dan Lust is going to join us next and talk about what this decision actually says, what it means for the athletes, what it means for the universities, and what it means going forward for them and for fans. He's going to join us next. It's Late Hits.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, joining us right now on the HRMP guest line, noted sports law attorney with the Garrigus & Garrigus Law Firm in New York City, the host of the Conduct Detrimental podcast, a guy that you hear across all major platforms in sports, and friend of the program, he's our buddy Dan Lust. What's going on, Dan? How are you?
Pat, I am good, and I am fired up for a historic day in sports law.
Now, funny you mention that, because a lot of things historic today. Number one, the fact that in today's society we could get a 9-0 decision among conservatives and liberals together, united in their hatred for one organization, is absolutely amazing. But exactly how severe is the rebuke of the NCAA with this decision today?
I mean, listen, I guess to your first point, we've known for about a year and a half that this was a bipartisan issue, at least in the legislative branch, right? We're seeing states pop up all over the place, left and right. They want to pass laws. Federal government looks like they want to pass a law. Even California passed unanimously. That was the first fair pay to play back in the end of 2019. So the fact that, I know it goes without saying, we don't really see unanimous decisions from the Supreme Court bench. So I think it sends a really aggressive shot across the bow. You know, this is a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision that went up. It's over in California. But there are other circuits in our country, the Third Circuit and the Seventh Circuit, that have sided for the NCAA, and they've looked back at this Board of Regents case from the 1980s. And there's a line from Justice Stevens, who wrote this decision way back when. And it's a case, the last time the Supreme Court has touched college sports back in the 80s, 40 years ago, basically reinvented the world of college sports as we know it. It was merely the advent of television contracts blowing up to million and billion dollar deals. So this is a really aggressive shot, right? It's calling NCAA athletes employees. It's using terms like fair market value. So this is a pretty aggressive shot at the NCAA's amateurism model. I'm not really sure what the NCAA thought they were going to get when they were the ones that appealed this, but I'm sure they're feeling a little bit of, we'll say, buyer's remorse today. They are much worse off today than they were when they decided to appeal this.
So what, for you, what are the key points of this decision? I know there is one in the concurring opinion by Justice Kavanaugh, and at the end, you know, major line here that everybody's focused on, the NCAA is not above the law. What, for you, were the biggest tenets from this decision?
I mean, let's break it down into just normal sports talk outside of the law, right? This is, what do they really do? There was a decision at the lower court, the first level. There was a decision at the appeals court that agreed with the lower court. So you have two sides, two courts agreeing with each other. And the NCAA, the NCAA tried to appeal this and unwind those two courts. And what did the Supreme Court do? They just affirmed the lower court. So this decision, as far as I'm concerned, Pat, could have just been one word, affirmed, period, end of story. But that's not what we got. We got 45 pages of decisions that really laid out in no unclear terms that the court, who has no dog in the race, they think what the NCAA is doing is illegal. So, you know, nine justices agreed, a unanimous opinion, which is very rare, number one. But Justice Kavanaugh's opinion was kind of solo. He went out on his own, and maybe he's the sports fan on the bench. I'm not sure, but his opinion leaves no stone unturned. That 1980 opinion that I told you with that guy, Justice Stevens, back in the 80s, he's saying, and that's why I think he ended his opinion like that, you know, the NCAA is not above the law, period, end of opinion, right? He stops, that's the last thing he says. I think that's his signal to say, the NCAA has no antitrust exemption. That's our way of saying it, period. That's really it. So people that are scared to challenge the NCAA, they're afraid that they'd lose in court, I think that's Kavanaugh sending a signal, hey, we're on your side. We are against the NCAA. We do not agree with what the NCAA is doing.
Dan, do you feel like this will, A, open up every state that hasn't passed a name, image, and likeness law in it to now pass one rather quickly? And B, do you think that this potentially opens up the NCAA to lawsuits from athletes who have been deemed, you know, ineligible because of things like this, or have been denied opportunities to earn because of things like this? Is the NCAA now at risk for a bunch of lawsuits?
So as to your second point, I don't think so. This would be all retroactive, because the NCAA's opinion, like on its face, it's just affirming the lower court's decision, which is basically, you know, the NCAA was trying to cap school-based reimbursements, be it laptops and books. It's a pretty narrow decision in that sense, but it's just kind of what we call in the law, it's a fancy word, it's called dicta. It's just interesting comments that aren't really binding on a court, they're not really law, but they're just, you know, the court's being instructive. If these topics come up, this is how the court's probably inclined to decide. So as to your first point, Pat, I do think this is going to send a message to state legislatures. Hey, wherever this is on your priority list, maybe it was below education, maybe it was below taxes and healthcare, let's ratchet this thing up. If we thought this was important, we're the justice of the United States Supreme Court. We voted 9-0 on something, which is very rare. So state legislatures and obviously the federal legislature, who we're all sitting and waiting for their federal bill, I think it's a signal that, hey, move this thing up your priority list. We think it's important, and you should too.
Dan, do you think this creates an environment where the richest teams now just become that much richer, because they're able to provide greater opportunities in name, image, and likeness for their players?
It's a good question. I went on the radio today in Alabama, and I told these guys my thoughts that I wanted a federal name, image, and likeness bill to kind of clean up the landscape, right? If schools want to pay athletes, that's fine. If donors want to pay athletes, I'm okay with that. But what I'm not truly okay with is this big disparity between the have and the have-nots. You guys are over in Texas. You just passed your name, image, and likeness law. So I'm considering you the have. If there's a tie between a non-NIL school and an NIL school, I think the NIL school will get the top athletes. I think it's a no-brainer if there's a tie. So, I think a federal bill will come in and clean this up to some extent. So to your point, Pat, the schools being rich, I know in the past, right, it just mattered how good your athletic facilities were. You couldn't get paid. But now maybe it's a little bit of an equalizer. All schools across the country, whether you're Alabama, you're Texas, or you're, you know, some smaller D2 school, everyone has rich donors. And it's a matter of how much these rich donors want to pocket up and pony up. So, yeah, I think there's a way that this levels the playing field. But I don't think you get there until all 50 states have some version of name, image, and likeness, and hopefully one that's uniform via a federal bill.
He is Dan Lust, noted sports law attorney with the law firm of Gerges & Gerges in New York City, host of the Conduct Detrimental podcast. Dan, with the way this is, you know, shaping up and the, you know, I guess the written beatdown the NCAA took, do you see this as the impetus for actual change in the NCAA? Do you see the NCAA possibly being replaced by another organization? What is the future of the NCAA right now to you?
I could just tell you that what's trending. I mean, we're obviously not going to hear, and the NCAA is not going to admit that they're falling apart at the seams. But actions speak louder than words, right? During the pandemic, I think I went on with you, Pat, and I told you something is happening because the NCAA is kind of punting all of these COVID decisions to the conferences. They're the ones making decisions. Mark Emmert was under a rock somewhere. He wasn't making any kind of public statements. That was left to the college football Power Five conferences, you know, obviously the smaller conferences. So they punt to the conferences. I get it. But now you kind of look, right, they're pleading with Congress. Mark Emmert's on the Senate witness stand, pleading with the Senate to bail them out of this, right, that they don't know how to deal with an image like this. We want a federal bill. And now, you know, at a certain level, they're dealing with the states. State law is going to preempt the NCAA. Now you have state and maybe even federal law that's going to preempt NCAA rules that we've known for about a century. And then you have athlete empowerment, which is taking over. So, you know, when the smoke clears, Pat, I'm not sure how much power the NCAA has left. And we know that Mark Emmert hasn't taken any accountability of it. So I don't know who's in charge, right? Because Mark Emmert certainly was not taking accountability to the Senate. And I don't know what they have left if their power is no longer going to be enforcing their rules, right? If you violate an NCAA rule now, it doesn't really matter, right? The state laws and federal laws might take precedence. So, yeah, they're losing a lot of power. I'm not sure the NCAA as we know it will exist in a decade. Maybe the NCAA in name. Maybe they need someone to, you know, kind of watch over players when they're trying these name, image, and likeness deals. Maybe it exists in some form, but this power entity that we've known it, I think that we've seen the death of it between NIL and the Supreme Court decision. Amateurism model looks all but gone.
Well, one of the things regarding the amateur model that I've never understood is the NCAA's definition of amateurism and the IOC's definition of amateurism being so different. How is it Olympic athletes, well, they can have sponsors and they can make money from their sponsors and still be considered amateurs. But in college sports, you're not allowed to have sponsors. And if you take a single dime, you're ineligible. How do we justify those two things? Because it seems like, you know, this Supreme Court ruling kind of is, you know, now going to push the NCAA more into the IOC model.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up the IOC. I did a segment on one of the other ESPN affiliates about golf, right? What is an amateur in golf? It's very different than what an amateur is in college sports. So I think all of these models, you know, the NCAA is going to have to figure it out. An amateur in golf has meant for forever that you can't accept money. So if you accept money as a college golfer, are you no longer an amateur on the tour? Can you not be in the amateur championship? So I think it's up for grabs right now, right? You don't say the term wild, wild west. You know, I don't say it that often, but I don't know what this is going to look like. And I think it bears mentioning too, Pat. I think the NCAA has to be a little concerned that they don't know what this is going to look like in 10 days. This morning, there was a report that came out that the NCAA was going to try to kind of hand off this establishment of NIL rules, what was going to define an amateurism in any given state. They were actually going to delegate that to the schools while the individual states figured it out. So if you were in a non-NIL state, your school could kind of take the reins over, that the NCAA was kind of punting with it. So I don't really know what model they're going to follow, the IOC model, the PGA model. There's a lot up there. So, yeah, the only thing I think we know for sure, Pat, is that this line of amateurism, what defines it, college athlete as being an amateur, I think it's all but gone, right? I think that's the biggest farce in college sports, that these guys resemble amateurs. When you have guys that are leaving on a one-and-done basis or in college football, you know, they're leaving a second, their draft stock is high enough. They're not there to get an education. They're there to improve their draft stock. So this isn't the NBA of the 70s when you had to stay all 4 years straight to play in the pros. This is a world where guys are looking to leave as soon as they can, as soon as their stock is at its highest. So, yeah, I think the NCAA has got a lot of thinking to do, and they can really blame themselves for this, for not acting quick enough. They had this opportunity 4 or 5 years ago after the O'Bannon decision in the Ninth Circuit with that video game decision when the NCAA basically was shown to be wrong in court that they owed these athletes money. If they would have got ahead of this, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, California doesn't drop that hammer and the other states don't follow. And I don't really think, truthfully, the Supreme Court takes this case. I think they took it because of kind of the windfall of public sentiment. But I don't think you get here. I think the NCAA really dug their own grave here.
Noted sports law attorney Dan Lust with us on the HRMP guest line with the law firm of Gergis & Gergis, host of the Conduct Detrimental podcast. Dan, where can people find your podcast?
Apple and Spotify. We did an emergency episode, Pat, today on the Supreme Court decision. We brought in, you know, we're actually all sports law professors on the podcast. So we had a trifecta of sports law professors today to analyze the decision. So Yeah, Conduct Detrimental, wherever podcasts are heard.
And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter, at SportsLawLust. Dan, appreciate you taking some time with us tonight, brother. We'll catch up soon.
Always a pleasure, Pat.
All right, Dan Lust. Garrigus with us on the HRNP guest line. Some really interesting things that Dan said there we'll get into next, as well as just how bad maybe this Deshaun Watson situation is getting bungled up. We'll get to all of it next.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Hey, the Culture Map Tastemaker Awards are back, celebrating the top talent in Houston's restaurant and bar community. So join us July 22nd at Silver Street Studios for our signature in-person tasting event and award ceremony. Come celebrate all the nominees like Restaurant of the Year, Bar of the Year, Best Neighborhood Restaurant, and more. We'll unveil the 2021 winners, and you'll get sample bites and sip specialty drinks along the way. Get your VIP and general admission tickets now at Houston.CultureMapTastemakers.com. And, of course, you know, one of our favorite spots, not in Houston, but actually in Beaumont, the West Bar and Grill, you know, the West of Beaumont Institution. Always a great place to catch all the games all the time. They have a menu with steaks and tramp wings and burgers, catfish, and more. You'll find something you like on the menu. Don't forget Wednesday and Saturday, those crawfish nights. Going to want to go catch up on those. Of course, they've got all your favorite beers, wines, and spirits. So enjoy your drinks and your meal while you're taking in the games, while you're playing all your favorite pub games, because, well, they got all your favorite pub games of the West. Pool to darts, ping pong to shuffleboard. Maybe you're like me, you like the arcade games. They got all of them. Happy hour in effect all day till 6 o'clock. Ask my buddy Mike Hamilton. Mike's the owner. He's going to make sure they take great care of you. The West Bar and Grill, 6445 Calder Avenue in Beaumont. Just a half mile north of I-10. Check out their Facebook page for events at the West Bar and Grill. Get your friends together and head to the West, a Beaumont institution. So we just spoke with Dan Lust from Garrigus & Garrigus, and he broke down everything that was going on with this NCAA decision, name, image, and likeness. This is called the Alston case. And 9-0, the Supreme Court just absolutely buried the NCAA as just being completely incompetent, having no idea what the hell they're doing. And Dan mentions about how, you know, in 1985, there was against case that was held again on the NCAA. It was NCAA versus the Board of Regents of Oklahoma University. And this was about, was the NCAA breaking antitrust laws by putting a limit on the number of times that any specific school could be on television? And the court ruled, yes, the NCAA was breaking antitrust laws, and they could not say, well, you're only allowed to be on TV, you know, twice in a year or three times a year or whatever, that they were illegally restricting the earning power of individual schools. And that is the case that ultimately leads to monster TV contracts, because all the top programs and the top conferences can now be on TV every week, every school, and they can get millions and millions of dollars. So that case opens up the TV market into the mega bucks. And ultimately that brought us to the O'Bannon case, and, you know, players should have been getting fair compensation for having their name, image, and likeness used in these games. And the NCAA at that time, instead of saying, oh, you know what, you're right, let's let the players get their piece of the pie, which is obviously very small. I mean, think about, you know, you have an NFL game that's licensed. You have an NLB game that's licensed. You have NBA. You have NHL. You have FIFA. You've got all these professional sports where there is a licensing agreement. Why could they not do the same thing for college? And really, it was because, well, the NCAA just didn't want athletes to make any money. And it's really all it is. They didn't want players to make money. And now with this particular case that, you know, they're not allowed to unfairly restrict what a player can make or put a cap on how much they can make or what their perks can be per se, probably opens another floodgate into what name, image, and likeness can actually be. And you heard Dan talk about how the NCAA actually had come up with this genius idea, and we're being very sarcastic here, about having individual schools determine what players could earn in name, image, and likeness if that school was not in a name, image, and likeness state. This is the same organization that wanted the federal government to bail them out with a blanket bill, was now going to let every school, potentially 130-plus different schools, all make their own rules as to what was and wasn't acceptable, as if that had any chance of being successful in any way, shape, or form. The NCAA is an absolute joke. Mark Emmert is a total clown. And the fact that he continues to have a job just furthers the NCAA basically down the spiral of death. And when you look at the fact that, let's look at college basketball. College basketball has the one and done rule. You've got a report out that the NBL, which is the Australian League, that this is a league that has created one additional roster spot that any team can use to bring in one American player. And that player does not have to be NBA eligible. You can bring in any one NBA player, right? Lonzo Ball and another player played in Australia last year before getting drafted into the NBA and playing this past season. There's a player who's a high prospect who's allegedly looking at a potential contract with an NBL team of $1 million. Now, I don't know how accurate that is because I don't really know a whole lot about the NBA and the NBL, the Australian League, and what their salary caps are and if they're really able to give that much money. But it's an eye-popping number for an 18-year-old kid to go to Australia, which is a pretty cool place to go, and get $1 million. Then you have, you know, the G League Ignite program where they can, you know, take in a handful of the best prospects in college basketball. And instead of them going to college, they go to the G League and they get their basketball education literally from guys who are being paid by NBA teams to coach these G League teams, by other players who are trying to get in the league or bounce back and forth in the league. And you're playing against, you know, significant talent. There are now these options almost get emboldened to, okay, well, you know what? We can up the money. We can up the amount of players. We can up the level of competition. We can up our advertising. We can up our tickets. We can make this bigger. It puts more pressure on the NCAA to come up with an actual plan of how they're going to handle this, or the NCAA is going to lose their top basketball players to foreign leagues who don't have a one-and-done rule, to the G League, which is the circumvent on the one-and-done rule. They're going to start losing these players, and that hurts the game of college basketball. You know, when you get into college football, there is very much setting up to have a haves versus have-nots in what schools have the money and what schools don't. You know what? You heard Dan Less say Texas recently passed an NIL law. You know what that means? Well, who's freaking richer than Texas? The University of Texas has more money than they can throw away. Texas A&M right behind them. There's a lot of money in big Texas football. That can be a game changer for other states that either don't have name, image, and likeness or don't have as much name, image, and likeness ability. How far are they willing to push the envelope to see what they can get away with? Are schools looking at it and saying, well, you know what? I'm going to do whatever I want because the NCAA has already gotten their face kicked in on this. What are they going to do to me? You know, we could kind of have a little bit of Wild West. And how much guys... All right, well, you can't get made to play paid to play football, but you can get paid to make an appearance. And it's not like, well, you're only allowed to make $200. I can pay you 10 grand to come stand in front of my store for an hour or two. Here, take pictures. Make nice with the fans. These guys can make a ton of money. I tell you what, it makes a big difference for the Pac-12 schools who are dying to get big talent in. How much money do you think there is in L.A.? How many connections do you think an L.A. school can have with, you know, music and movies and videos? Oh, here, well, not only will we pay you for your name, image, and likeness, but here, this recording studio wants you to come in and hang out with them. Oh, and there'll be a huge crowd, and you'll make a ton of money. You think that's not going to get big talent going to L.A.? You think USC and UCLA aren't just chomping at the bit for this? I tell you, it's going to make, you know, if you have a choice of, well, I could go to Alabama and, you know, if you've ever been to Tuscaloosa, the city smells funny. I stayed there a couple of times. It has like a refinery smell to it. It smells a little, it's a beautiful town. I stayed in a great hotel in downtown Tuscaloosa right by the university. Beautiful, beautiful area. Smell like a refinery. You smell it even inside the hotel. If you have your choice of, well, you know what? I can make some money, you know, playing in Tuscaloosa, or I could go play in L.A. and not only make way more money, but I can get in with Hollywood stars and rappers and rock groups and actors and stuff. Where are you going? Probably not a real hard decision. We'll get into the Deshaun stuff as we hit the home stretch next.
It's before you. ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Hey, let me tell you about my good friend Dr. Ben Salento at Texas Sinus and Snoring. You know, I tell you all the time, Dr. Ben changed my life. I spent over 20 years, man, I had trouble breathing. My sinuses were so bad, I had sinus infections every other month. I developed terrible snoring. I had sleep apnea. I couldn't sleep at night. I woke up more tired than when I went to bed. I was miserable. Every doctor I had gone to see would just give me antibiotics that temporarily would fix the sinus issues, but didn't fix the sleep apnea. It didn't fix the snoring. I still didn't sleep at night, and I still felt miserable. I met Dr. Ben not quite 2 years ago, and he was the only doctor that wanted to find out why I felt this way. What was the cause of these symptoms? I went up to go see him. He's got a state-of-the-art facility in North Houston. I explained to him everything that was going on. We did a CT scan right there in his office. He put the results up on the board. We put a plan of action together. A month later, I had a procedure. They removed staph infection from my sinuses that just wouldn't go away. It was why I was always sick. He did a balloon sinuplasty. It opened up all the airways in my head and fixed all the damaged tissues in my sinuses from the constant infection. They did a septoplasty. They fixed my deviated septum. I could breathe better. In fact, my airways were now open. I could breathe so much better. A, not only could I now smell things that I didn't smell before, but B, I no longer snored. I slept through the night. I didn't have apnea anymore. I could breathe better. I could sleep better. I felt rested when I woke up. I felt good. If you have trouble sleeping because either you've got constant sinus issues, if you've got terrible snoring, if you have sleep apnea, you need to go at least have a consultation with Dr. Ben. Let him tell you how he can make your life better the way he made my life better. Write down this number, 346-413-9313. 346-413-9313. Go to TexasSinusAndSnoring.com. Schedule your appointment with Dr. Ben. Go have that consultation. Tell him I sent you by. Let him do for you what he did for me. So last week we had, I had speculated the idea of, you know, the Texans and the league, you know, they're probably going to put their heads together and say, well, you know what, before we get to training camp, we're going to tell you what we're going to do with Deshaun Watson so that you guys don't have to worry about how you're going to handle it. And then a couple of days later, a story came out that said the Texans were expecting the league to give them a direction on how they're going to handle Deshaun Watson in the next couple of weeks, which would be before training camp started. It was almost like, boy, guess that one, right on schedule. And I don't think it's that big a guess to think, well, a team and the league would get behind closed doors and decide together what they were going to do with what they would consider a rogue player who's dealing with a ton of legal issues and also wants away from his team as hard as possible. Well, Rusty Harden told KPRC2 this week that Deshaun Watson hasn't been interviewed by anyone in the NFL at all. Well, considering the NFL is investigating Deshaun Watson, you would think one of the people that they would need to have conversations with and interview would be Deshaun Watson. So far, the league has been completely uninterested in anything Deshaun has to say. They haven't interviewed him. They haven't tried to interview him. Rusty Harden also said that there are no talks ongoing for any settlements with any of the 22 women that filed suit against Watson. Well, that would play into what Tony Busby said, right? We go back to the beginning of this. Tony Busby wanted a settlement, and Deshaun's camp said, get out of town. We're not settling with you. You're out of your mind. But now that this has blown up to 22 lawsuits, and Deshaun is in purgatory and he can't do anything, now Deshaun has greater reason to want to settle. Not to say I did it and I'm sorry, but to put it behind him so that the NFL can make their ruling, he can get some closure on what his punishment is going to be, and he can get back to football. Well, Tony Busby knows this, and since Deshaun now has a motivation to want to settle, well, that means the price is higher, so why would Tony Busby settle now when he can drag it out and get more money the longer he waits? And obviously everybody around the league expects that Deshaun is either going to be suspended or put on the exempt list by the time the season comes around. Obviously the Texans would like to have that decision before they get to training camp so they don't have to deal with any potential Watson issues. Is he going to show? Is he not going to show? He doesn't show. All right, well, he doesn't show. He doesn't want to be here. We're going to deal with the guys that want to be here. He's got legal issues. We can't discuss it. If he shows, then it's even worse. Right? How much pressure, how much embarrassment now comes on the Houston Texans franchise if Deshaun actually shows up? And then they got to tell him, all right, look, you need to go home. You can't be around here. And the media circus that would ensue. So the Texans are praying and begging that the NFL is going to bail them out by, at a minimum, putting them on the exempt list by the time the season, the training camp starts. That way, they can take all the questions out of the equation. You know what? He's on the exempt list. That's all we got to say. And really, if he goes on the exempt list, it gives them the biggest out, right? Hey, look, he's on the exempt list. He can't be here. Next question. Well, what do you think about he's on the exempt list? He can't be here. Next question. That's what you'll get. And that is exactly what they want. So to have Rusty Harden come out and say, yeah, the league hasn't even tried to talk to us. They haven't reached out They haven't requested an interview. They haven't scheduled anything. They haven't spoken to us in any way, shape, or form. That's got a little bit of the what the hell is going on feel to it. Doesn't it make you feel, oh, well, they haven't even interviewed Deshaun. That can mean, what, one of two things. Number one, they're really dragging ass on this investigation. They don't know what they're looking for. They don't have a whole lot of evidence against them. You know, that's real. That's real concrete evidence. That's not just, well, this person said. But then their actions don't belly their words, and there's no actual proof. There's nothing to it. It's just somebody making an allegation with nothing to stand on. Or they've decided he is so guilty that they don't even need to talk to him. They've already decided, we don't need to talk to him. He is so guilty. He's so busted. We are bringing the hammer down. We're going to make an example out of Deshaun bigger than the example we made out of Ezekiel Elliott. Either way, if you're the Texans and if you're Deshaun, all you want is certainty. Am I getting six games? Am I getting eight games? Am I getting 10 games? Am I getting a year? Whatever it is, you know I'm going to appeal. Try to get it down a little more. But once you have the certainty, now you have a definitive plan that you can move forward with. Now, once again, you have a tradable asset. It's almost mind-boggling the NFL hasn't even called. Astros are up 5-0. Looks like a day that my Islanders forgot that there was a hockey game tonight because they're getting pasted in Tampa Bay right now. It's 6-0. Can't win them all. It's going to do it for us tonight. Appreciate Dan Lust, Garrigus and Garrigus, Andy Martino, SNY, Aaron Rabel on the other side of the glass. All three guys for the great work they did. Our texters, tweeters, and twitchers. We're back on Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. We'll see you then, late hitters.
ESPN 97.5.